Jai. So, we've been speaking about Lord Ram and Ramayana every day. So, Omagana Timadanda Shagaman Jana Shlakaya Chapsur and Miditam Yena Tismai Shigurve Namaha. So, before we continue with the Ramayana, I just wanted to speak a little bit about today being a very special day in the Vaishnava calendar, because it is the appearance day of Lakshman when he appeared as Ramanuja, Ramanujacharya. So there's a great Acharya, one of the four main modern representatives of the Sampradayas, and his name is Ramanujacharya, and he comes in the Sri Sampradaya. Sri Sampradaya means Lakshmi Sampradaya. So the other Sampradaya, of course, the Brahma Sampradaya, then the Shiva Sampradaya, and the Kumara Sampradaya, disciplic successions. So today is his appearance day, so I want to speak a little bit about him, because if we ignore Lakshman, guess what happens? We become demons. Just like there was a great devotee of Lord Ram who was disrespectful to Lakshman and he became a demon. Does anyone know who that is? None of you know the Ramayana. You're supposed to be Ramayana people here. I'm embarrassed. Anyway, there was one of the greatest devotees of Lord Ram disrespected Lakshman, and he became a demon. And he still loved Ram. So here's the story. That great devotee, he was called Dvigvida Gorilla. Heard of him before? Anyone's heard of him? Oh my God. I thought this was the Hare Krishna movement, or at least devotees of Ram here. So Dvigvida Gorilla, along with his brother Maina, were assisting Ram in building the bridge, Setu Bandha, the bridge to Lanka, and also in fighting with Raman. And they were very powerful guerrillas, very dear to Ram. But Vidvira, he criticized Lakshman. And because he criticized Lakshman, guess what? He remained on this earth planet, yes, but later on, he offended Lakshman in a different form, and that form was Balaram. This is a story in the Bhagavatam. You know, first we go to the Ramayana, then to the Bhagavatam. So, what happened is that Balaram was dancing with all of his dancing girls, you know, rasa dance, on the Raivataka mountain. And this Vidvida gorilla, he started to harass Balaram and the gopis. First of all, he showed the lower portion of his body. And he made a sound. Does anyone know the sound he made? Nobody here has read Krishna book. I'm embarrassed. Well, he made the sound, Kela, Kela, which is similar to Kila Gila, banana, banana. Anyway, so he's making the sound. And then he started to grab the gopis. And Balaram, boom, killed him. So Balaram is the same as Lakshman, the same person. So today is not Vidvira's appearance day. Today is Lakshman's appearance day as Ramanujacharya. So the word Ramanuja means the younger brother of Ram. So I want to tell a little bit about him before we go on to the Ramayana. And this is actually, it's part of the Ramayana because it's actually Ram's brother. Very important. So, anyway, once upon a time, there was a great, I'm not going to tell the whole story, I mean, I could go on 2 days on this, but there was a great devotee named Yamunacharya, who was also the predecessor, came before Ramanujacharya in the Sri Sampradaya, and he had, His chief follower had two sisters, and one of those sisters was the mother of Ramanuja. So he's considered an incarnation of Lakshman. So what happened is that Ramanujacharya, when he was really young, he had a guru who was an impersonalist, who didn't believe in God, who believed in the Brahman. And his guru gave a commentary on the Chandogya Upanishad, in which it described the color of Krishna's eyes. And his guru translated that Chandogya Upanishad portion as Krishna's eyes are as red as the rear end of a monkey. And that's a great offense. So Ramanuj cried and he defeated his guru. And he had many arguments with his guru, who was an impersonalist, and defeated him. So the guru decided, I got to kill this disciple. He's going to create problems for impersonalism. So he wanted to take his disciple to the Ganges on a pilgrimage. He was in South India. Remember, this is Kanchi. Kanchi is South India. It's in Tamil Nadu, the state in India. It's further south than Madras or Chennai, as it's known now. So he planned to take all of his disciples to the Ganges and kill Ramanuja and take a bath in the Ganges. Because once you take a bath in the Ganges, you can get away with killing anybody. So that's a nice procedure, isn't it? You kill someone and you take a bath in the Ganges. Or you kill someone and you chant Hare Krishna. Of course, that's a sin on the strength of chanting. So Ramanuja was informed by his brother Govinda that this is what was going to happen. So Ramanuja escaped in the middle of the night, and somehow or other, by the mercy of Vishnu and Narayan, Vishnu and Lakshmi, made his way back to Kanchi. So he defeated his guru a few times. And to make a long story short, his guru eventually took initiation from him, which is pretty nice. Normally that doesn't happen. But if your guru is a bogus rascal, it's okay if he takes initiation from you. So Ramanujacharya also had a wife, a very nice wife, whose name was Kanchipurna. Rakshakambal. And his wife was very disrespectful towards his Siksha guru. Very many things that Ramanujacharya's wife created problems with. For example, one time his Siksha guru's wife was taking water from a well, and some of that water fell on Ramanujacharya's wife's bucket. And Ramanujacharya's wife got so upset that she dumped the water back in the well. And then another time, Ramanujacharya invited their Siksha guru to his home for prasadam. The Siksha guru came early, and Ramanujacharya's wife served him, and then she took the remnants and fed them to low-class people and dogs, and she wouldn't give it to Ramanujacharya. So Ramanuja made a whole plan that he could take sannyas. He told his wife, a false message from his wife's mother that there was a marriage taking place in her village and she should go immediately. And so she got this message and she said to her husband, I have to go to the marriage. And he said, I'll be with you very shortly. But as soon as she left, he took sannyas. Big trick. So he never met Yamunacharya, his direct, ancestor in the spiritual realm. But he arrived at Yamunacharya's, funeral right before Yamunacharya was put in the ground. And Yamunacharya had three fingers clenched in his hand like that. And as Ramanujacharya recited what the unfinished aspects of the mission of Yamunacharya were, each of the fingers opened up on the body, even though the person, Yamunacharya, had left this world. And that the three aspects of Ramanuja's mission that his guru, Yamunacharya, was not able to accomplish were, one, teaching people in general about Krishna consciousness, two, write a Vedanta commentary, and three, name one disciple after Parashara Muni. So one thing that Ramanujacharya is very famous for is that he wanted to receive the mantra. Now there's a mantra that's chanted in the Lakshmi Sampradaya, in Ramanujacharya Sampradaya, Om Namo Narayanaya. And if you go to Kanchipurna or to Srirangam, you'll hear this mantra being chanted continually. They just chant, remember Rupanuga? You were there with us. Remember being there with us? No. Too many years. You're having your senior moments. So, anyway, they chant this all the time. Om Namo Narayanaya. Om Namo Narayanaya. So he wanted to be initiated in this mantra, which at that time was a secret mantra. So he approached one of the disciples of Yamunacharya and asked him, please give me the mantra. And the disciple refused, disciple Yamunacharya. And so Ramanujacharya went back to him again, and finally he said, all right, I'll give you the mantra, but you cannot tell anyone else the mantra, because if anyone else hears it, they get liberated. So Ramanujacharya said, yes, Guru Maharaj. And so he got the mantra, and then Ramanujacharya, after he got the mantra, went up to the tallest building in the city and said, anyone who's interested in this mantra can come in here. And he gave the mantra to the whole city. And the guru came back, that is, Goshtipurna, who was his mantra guru, came back, and he was so angry with Ramanuja, he said, because you've given the mantra to everybody, you're going to hell. And Ramanujacharya said, that's all right, Guru Maharaj. I don't mind going to hell if I can liberate everybody. And the guru said, you're my actual guru, because you have actually surpassed me by understanding the meaning of compassion. So, trying to tell this story very, very quickly. So anyway, so after some time, the king, actually the king of the area there, he was a devotee of Lord Shiva, and he wanted Ramanujacharya to give up his worship of Vishnu and to just worship Lord Shiva. So what he did is he said, bring Ramanuja here. He had the intention of killing Ramanuja. So Ramanujacharya understood what was happening, so he sent his foremost disciple, Quraysh, to talk to the king. And Quraysh refused to give up his devotion to Vishnu, and the king put the eyes out of Ramanujacharya's disciple, Quraysh. In other words, he poked his eyes out. And so Quraysh was blind at that particular point. And when he got back to Ramanujacharya, Ramanujacharya said, go to the temple of Viradharaja, that's in Kanchi, and ask for your eyes back. So this disciple went to the temple of Viradharaja. Remember that temple? Kanchipurna, Purim. So he went to the temple, and instead of asking for his eyes back, he asked if the king would be forgiven. That's the compassion of a Vaishnava. So then Ramanujacharya said to him afterwards, go back again. Don't you understand? Your eyes belong to me. I'm your spiritual master. You're meant to serve me. So Quraysh went back, asked for his eyes back, and then, boop, he got his vision back. Pretty interesting story. And the king, who had actually done this to Quraysh, he got an infection in his throat and he died. And his name was changed to Krimikanta, which means worm throat. because he had offended this great Vaishnava, actually. And Ramanujacharya defeated so many Jains. One time he was had an argument with 1,000 Jains, and they all committed suicide when they were defeated. So anyway, there's many more stories, but I want to get into the Ramayana. Finally, when he got ready to leave this world, he gave his disciples 4 instructions. Number 1, serve the Vaishnavas. Number 2, have faith in the Vedas and devotees. 3, conquer lust, anger, and greed. And 4, worship Narayan. And he left his body with his head on the lap of one of his foremost disciples, his cousin Govinda. And he had the devotees, before he left, make a deity of him. And the deity is still there in Srirangam. And then also the devotees preserved his body. They wrapped it in cloth, like the Egyptians did with mummies. So they wrapped his body in cloth, and if you go to Srirangam today, you can see his transcendental body. Remember? He's sitting there, there's a deity in front of him, and he's sitting there and back with his danda. And of course you can't see the features of his body, but they say his nails are still growing after all these years. And this is a long time, it's like 700-800 years ago. So that's Ramanujacharya. So now we'll go on to the Ramayana. Can you turn up the volume here? Because I'm having to speak too loud and too close to the microphone. So yesterday, we were talking about the events preceding the appearance of Lord Ram. We told the story of Rishi Sringa, remember? The sage with the horn in his head. And then he performed that Putra Kameshti ceremony. Let me get to the place where we had this. Okay. And eventually he went to the kingdom of Romapad, and Romapad lent him to Dasarath, his good friend, and Dasarath had the ceremony performed, and out of the ceremony there was shira, which is like condensed milk with rice, and that was divided up. Half was given to Gosalya, and half was given to Kaikeyi. And Sumitra didn't get any. But then Gosalya and Kaikeyi, they felt very compassionate upon Sumitra, the third wife, and they gave her a portion of theirs. So therefore we understand that Sumitra's sons would be the servants of Kosalya's and Kaikeyi's son, right? And so therefore you have Lakshman, who is the servant, the menial servant of Ram, and then with Bart, so you have Shatrughna, who is his menial servant. You understand? So there's two pairs there. And of course they all love Ram. So, let's see. Okay, and as they grew, they were trained up in the ashram of Vashishtha Muni. And then what happened is when they were very, very young, about 16 years old, 14, 16, different versions of the story give a different year, then Visvamitra came to the kingdom of Ayodhya. And when Visvamitra came to the kingdom of Ayodhya, he was presenting a problem that he had. And his problem was that he was performing the sacrifice, and these rascal Rakshasas, Marich and Subahu, they were actually desecrating his sacrifice. They were throwing down stool and urine and bones and blood into the sacrifice and destroying the sacrifice. So Visvamitra Muni came to ask for help, and Dasarath said to him, "I will go and help you." And Visvamitramuni said, no, I want Ram. And so Dasaras said, no way. I'm not giving you Ram. Ram is more dear to me than life. He's just a little kid. I'll go with my whole army. And Visvamitramuni said, I heard that the members of the Ikshvaku dynasty kept their promises. And then he recited the whole list of the members of the Ikshvaku dynasty, beginning with Aviveswan, Manu, Ikshvaku, etc. And he said, but now I have seen there's an adharmic member of the Ikshvaku dynasty. And so you are not keeping your promise. And he got very angry, and he was getting ready to run out and curse and everything like that. And Vasishta, the guru, the cool guru, Kula guru of the Ikshvaku dynasty, said to Dasarath, don't worry. He can protect Ram himself, and Ram will not get into any difficulty. The reason Visvamitramuni had not actually killed the demons himself was because he had taken a vow of not only silence, but a vow of shanti during his sacrifice. So, eventually Dasarath agrees, and Ram goes, and Lakshman goes with him. And as they are proceeding to the sacrifice, they run into this forest, which is devastated, which has basically no trees and no animals. And Ram asks, why is this forest devastated like that? And Visvamitramuni says, because there is this demoness there, Tadaka. And she's actually the mother of Marich. Maybe you didn't know that. And she used to be a very beautiful girl, but she offended a sage, so she was cursed to become a demoness. And so she's devastated everybody. So, anyway, so Ram makes his sound with his bow, and Tadaka wakes up, and he's very reluctant to fight with this woman, because according to the Vedic culture, you're not supposed to kill women. Not supposed to kill women, you're not supposed to kill children, you're not supposed to kill old men, you're not supposed to kill Brahmins. You can kill Kshatriyas if you like. Just like that story in the Srimad Bhagavatam and Mahabharata. When Ashwatthama kills the five sleeping sons of Draupadi, then Arjuna brings Ashwatthama back, and Bhimsen is saying, kill him. And Krishna is saying, you've got to listen to Bhimsen. And Draupadi is saying, he's the son of a Brahmin, you can't kill him. So Arjuna has this conflict. In order to resolve that conflict, he cuts the jewel from the head of Ashwatthama. And Krishna curses Ashwatthama to smell so badly that nobody will go near him for 5,000 years. But the point is, there is no injunction for killing a Brahmin. Even if a Brahmin does something, you have to do something else to kill him. Not to literally kill him, but to figuratively kill him. So, anyway, getting back to the story, Ram is very reluctant to fire the arrow at Tadaka, and Visvamitramuni says to him, you better kill him, kill her, before it becomes dusk, because the demons become more powerful at dusk. So Ram, he kills the demoness. And it's interesting that Krishna, when he appeared later on, the first demon he killed was a lady too, isn't it? Who was the demon Krishna killed? Putana. So actually, women get equal treatment by Krishna. If you have women demons, they're also killed by Krishna. Krishna does not discriminate. He's not a male chauvinist. So, anyway, getting back to the story. So they proceed to the sacrifice, and Visvamitramuni starts to do his sacrifice. Swaha, swaha, swaha. And while he's doing it, the demons up in the air, the Rakshasas up in the air, Marich and Savahu, they actually start to throw down their mucus and blood and pus and stool and bones and everything like that. And Ram makes like a chakra in the air. This is absorbed or destroyed before it actually hits the ground. And then Ram fires one arrow and Subahu is killed. And then he fires another arrow at Marich. And Uncle Marich, Mama Shri, seems like uncles are always evil in the Vedic literature. So he fires the arrow and he shoots him out into the ocean 800 miles away. That's why, you know, Marich later on is an important character in the Ramayana. So after, just a little story about Marich then. So anyway, he's thrown into the ocean 800 miles away. Later on, he tries to kill Ram again. Because when Ram is with Sita in the forest, he takes the form of an eight-legged beast called a Sabara, or Shabara, which means pig. But an eight-legged beast, and he tries to attack Ram, and Ram fires an arrow at him again, and this time he runs away and is not hit by the arrow. And at that point, Marich becomes so traumatized by Ram, it's described in the Ramayana, that even if he hears the first syllable of Ram's name, Rai, he starts to shake. And he takes sannyas. True. I mean, this is actually in the Ramayana, the Valmiki Ramayana. Uncle Marich, poor Uncle Marich, he takes sannyas. And so when Ram comes to him later on, you know, skipping ahead a little bit, Ram comes to him later on and asks him to trick Sita Devi. He doesn't want to do it. And actually, the first time he refuses and he tells Ravan, Ravan comes to him. And he tells Ravan that you're going to die. And so Ravan takes his advice. But later on, Ravan is advised by Surpanaka that he must kidnap Sita Devi, so he goes back to Marich. And Marich doesn't want to do it, and he knows he's going to die at the hands of Ram, but he decides, as Prabhupada said, that it's better to die at Ram's hand than to die at Ravan's hand. So that's the story of poor Uncle Marich. His mother was killed, and then eventually he was harassed by Ram, poor guy, and eventually gets killed when he takes the form of the golden deer. So, anyway, going on with the story. Then they proceed after the sacrifice. Ram protects the sacrifice. They proceed to Mithila. Now, Mithila is a very interesting place, and Janaka is a very interesting person. Of course, Janaka is the father of Sita Devi. But let's describe a little bit about the family history of Janaka. Janaka's ancestor was named King Nimi. And King Nimi also had as his spiritual master Vasishtha Muni. So, this is a story for the Bhagavatam. So, King Nimi, he decided he wanted to do Harinam. Big sacrifice, Harinam sacrifice with a havan and everything like that. So he goes to his guru, Vasishtha Muni, and says, Guru Maharaj, can we do this? And Guru Maharaj said, yes, it's a good idea, but I have another appointment right now. I have to go to the heavenly planets to do a sacrifice for Indra. And so basically there's some commentary that he was thinking that Indra gives a bigger donation, so he's going up there. So he went to the heavenly planets. In the meantime, Nimi Maharaj understands that human life is very short. I don't have time because if, you know, Guru Maharaj is gone in the heavenly planets, one moment in the heavenly planets is years and years on the earth planet. So he decides, let's do the sacrifice without Guru Maharaj. So he starts the sacrifice, they're chanting Nitai Gauranga, maybe not that, but Hare Krishna. And Guru Maharaj comes back and he sees his disciple doing... This is the history of Janaka. I'm reminding you of that. He sees his disciple doing the sacrifice and he says, I'm really angry with you. I curse you to die. And the word is nir deha. I curse you to be without a body. And the disciple, Bharaj Nimi, says, Guru Maharaj, here's your Guru Dakshin. I curse you to be without a body too. So both the Guru and the disciple die. Nice Guru Dakshin. So anyway, so they both die. And what happens is that, of course, Vishishta Muni, he appears later on from the Semen of Mitra and Varuna. That's a different story. And Maharaj Nimi's body is preserved in oil. So the Brahmins who were doing the sacrifice, they finish the sacrifice, and the demigods come down. The demigods say, what do you want? And they say, we want Maharaj Nimi to be brought back to life. And so Maharaj Nimi comes out of the oil, and he says, I don't want to be brought back to life. I was back in the spiritual world. What the heck are you bringing me back here for? And so he goes back in the oil, dies. But there's a problem. There's no king. And so there's no prince. And genetically, there has to be someone proper to be the king. So they take Maharaj Nimi's body and they take the genes out of it. And they clone the genes, you know, or something. And combine them. It's called churning. I mean, the word churning. But it actually is, it's a fancy form of genetic engineering, like they do now. Like the scientists, they have this device called CRISPR. I don't know if anyone's heard of it before. In which they can alter your genes and give you a fantastic body. Anyway, so, or give your children. In the future, you'll be able to get designer children. You just go to the gene factory and say, you know, I would like a child with a brain like this, a good rugby player, all around, you know, Superman. So, anyway, so they churned his body, genetically engineered the body, and they got Janaka the First coming out of the body. And that was Janaka the First. Because like in Europe, they have different kings, what? King Henry the First, King Henry the Second, King Henry the Third, and eventually King Henry the Eighth, who was the most religious of all the kings. That's a joke. Anyway, you don't know your history. Anyway, so what can be done? So what happened is that this first Janaka had a child. And he was Janaka the Second, and Janaka the Third, Janaka the Fourth, all the way to the Janaka who is the father of Sita Devi. And of course, Janaka was not the actual father of Sita Devi, but he discovered Sita Devi in a box as he was plowing the earth. And we mentioned the other day, oh yes, how Sita Devi happened to come in the box. So he adopted her as his daughter and raised her, and he was arranging for her marriage. And that marriage ceremony, or the arrangement, or the competition, is called a Swayamvara. Swayamvara means, basically, the girl picks her own, because she has a right to say no. Even if someone else picks up the bow, or whatever, she can say, no, I don't want him. Like in the case of Karna, in Draupadi's Swayamvara. Draupadi said, no, I don't want this Shudra guy. And he had to drop the bow. So what happened is that Janaka announced, and all the kings came. There's two different versions of the story, actually. One version is all the kings came separately at different times. And another version is they were all there together. In the Valmiki Ramayana, they all came separately. I believe in the Tulsidas Ramayana, they're all together. So, I accept the Valmiki Ramayana. Anyway, the kings came separately at different times to try their hand with the bow. The reason they have picked the bow is because of the bow of Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva's bow was so heavy, it's described in the Valmiki Ramayana, it took like 500 men just to roll it on the ground. I mean, it was incredibly heavy. And so, basically, One time, you know, Sita Devi had lost something and she picked up the bow with it, you know, one little hand or something like that. Said, what a strong daughter I have. You know? So they understood anyone who could pick up the bow and string it could marry Sita Devi. And you got all these different kings who tried one by one, and none of them could even pick it up. It was terrible, poor kings. And so eventually, Ram comes with Lakshman and Vishwamitra Muni, and Vishwamitra Muni says to Ram, you should do it. Because he's very dependent on his guru. His guru tells him, you know, what he should do, what he should not do. He has a lot of guru bhakti. As we mentioned yesterday, that's one of the main topics in the Ramayana. The dedication and devotion that Ram had to his mother, to his father, to his guru, that Lakshman had to his brother, etc. So Ram picks up the bow, gets ready to string it, and it breaks. Now, I just said it breaks. I didn't say he broke it. I deliberately said it broke. I didn't say he broke it. And the reason I said that is because he did not break the bow. The bow itself broke. The reason the bow broke, according to the Valmiki Ramayana, is that the bow did not want to be used to fight against Lord Shiva's devotee. Because who was Lord Shiva's devotee? Ravan. So the bow thought, you know, the bow was a person. I don't want to be used against my gurus, my master's devotee. So he broke. And so as soon as he broke the bow, there was a problem because the person who'd given the bow, his name was Parshuram. Not the Parshuram we have here in Fiji, but different Parshuram. And Parshuram was the warrior incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he had given up all of his weapons. And so he wasn't residing on the earth anymore. So he comes down. He hears the bow had been broken. And says, who has broken the bow? And Lakshman basically says, anyone could have broken that bow. And then Parshuram says, who is this kid? You know, and you're going to kill him, basically. He has a temper. Bad temper. So Ram steps forward and says, I broke the bow, Ram. He said, you're Ram? He said, I'm Ram. You know, Parshuram and Ram. And if you are so intelligent, let us see you pick up Vishnu's bow. And so he looks at Ram, and without even giving him Vishnu's bow, Ram already has the bow in his hand. And at that point, Parashuram is saying, uh-oh, I'm in trouble here. And Ram has strung the bow, and he has the arrow ready to fire. He says, okay, where should I fire the arrow? I can't not fire the arrow, because it's described one, Ram has, you know, one wife, one word, one arrow. And Parashuram was thinking, you know, what you can do is shoot it at all my pious activities, you know. Because he didn't want to lose his ability to travel, because he wasn't supposed to be, he actually wasn't supposed to be on the earth planet for very long, because he had told Kashyapa, who he had turned his weapons over to, that he wasn't going to reside on the earth planet. So Parashuram leaves, and Ram and the marriage party proceed. Well, actually, before that, there's other stories I got to tell. Sorry about that. There's the whole story that's told here. About Vishwamitra Muni, because there's a whole history of Vishwamitra Muni. So, and incidentally, the Prime Minister of Janaka Maharaj is the son of Gautama Rishi and Ahalya. I forgot to tell that story. That on the way to Ayodhya, Ram stops at the ashram of Gautama Rishi. Gautama Rishi is no longer there. He's gone to heaven. And he's left his wife, who's a ghost, not a stone. In the Valmiki Ramayana, Ahalya is not mentioned as a stone, but as a ghost. You know what I'm saying? There's a difference. I mean, basically it's the same story, but it's a little bit different details. So she's a ghost there because she had had a relationship with Indra, who had taken the form of Gautama Rishi. Anyway, and she'd been cursed by her husband to remain a ghost, and Ram comes through and he liberates her, and she goes back to join her husband. So tomorrow we'll start telling the whole story, the story of the family and history of Viswamitra Muni, how he became Viswamitra Muni, and how previously he was a king as a Kshatriya, and he became transformed into a Brahmin. So I guess we have to end now. All right, thank you very much. All glories to Lord Ramchandra, Sita Ram, Lakshman, Hanuman, Ki Jai, Shri Prabhupada, Ki Jai.